ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Of all the aquatic ecosystems, the ones we probably think we know most about are coral reefs. I mean, we've got Finding Nemo and about 1,000 David Attenborough documentaries. But we actually know a lot less about them than we think. And we know even less about the zones just a tiny bit deeper in the ocean. I'm Tegan Taylor and this is Occam's Razor, a soapbox for science. And I'd like to introduce you to Yi Kai T. He researches and names fish that live in a place some call the Twilight Zone.
So as a society, we've always had an intrinsic passion for discovery. We've climbed the tallest mountains, we've explored the deepest rainforests, we've put probes and cameras down the deepest parts of our oceans, and we've even been to space. And it's this desire to learn more about our natural world that is perhaps our most redeeming quality as a society. But of all the great ecosystems that we've ventured to and explored, very few have the same magnetic quality that coral reefs have over humankind. And you've probably heard this saying before that coral reefs are the rainforests of our seas. But the extent to which coral reefs dominate our planet is surprisingly small. For comparison, they account for only 5% of all the rainforests that we have, or 0.1% of our Earth's surface. This tiny little amount is spread further thinly as a discontinuous band across our equatorial oceans and seas. Yet coral reefs are the most diverse marine habitat per unit area, and even this diversity is not symmetrical. By far, the most productive reefs are the ones that are occurring in the Coral Triangle, which is a boundary that's bounded to the north by the Philippines, Indonesia to the west, and the Solomon Islands to the east. For comparison, a single reef in the heart of the Coral Triangle has almost twice as many fishes as the entire Atlantic Ocean combined. So that's just some food for thought for you. So in the almost two centuries of coral reef research and countless representation in mainstream media, we're talking about your David Attenborough docos, Finding Nemo, Little Mermaid, why is it we're asking more questions than we care to answer about coral reefs? And that's because coral reefs are a lot more complex and sophisticated and hard to get to than we might think. Take our understanding of the fishes that live in coral reefs, for example. It's only as recent as the 1950s that taxonomy of coral reefs entered its golden age, where proliferous discovery of new fishes were discovered by men, many of which have never been seen before. And this coincided with the advent of scuba diving. I mean, obviously, now we have a way to get into a realm that we previously couldn't go to before, so we are discovering lots of new things. And I dropped a word there that you may or may not be familiar with, and that's taxonomy. And in its most simple definition, taxonomy is really just the science of naming, defining, and classifying living things based on a set of shared characteristics. So I want you to think of the fruit aisle at your local Woolies. You have your citrus fruits and your stone fruits, your apples and your pears, and your citrus are grouped based on the lemons and the limes and the oranges and your mandarins. And if you want to go in further, your mandarins are arranged based on the varieties. And there are taxonomies for all sorts of things, birds, insects, spiders, in my case, fish. And you're probably sitting there wondering what the fish taxonomy is doing in 2023. Like, surely we've discovered all the new fishes, right? Is this what you're paying your tax money for, to fund my dead-end research? And for me to stand here and ask you esoteric questions about how your local supermarket arranges the fruits? Well, the answer is no. Coral reef science and the taxonomy for all the critters that live in there is very much alive. And while scuba technology has trailblazed what we've understood about coral reefs, it does have its limitations. And this is because coral reefs extend for much deeper than what we know. They go down to about 250 meters. And this is where, to me, things get really exciting. This is where light is almost at its limit, but not quite. It's very attenuated, but not completely dark. We're still in coral reefs, it's just that it's really, really dark down there. We call this the mesophotic, or for the more romantically inclined, the twilight zone. So it's too deep for a scuba diver to access, but ironically, it's way too shallow to put submarines and submersibles there because it's too shallow, it's too complex. So it sits in this weird, awkward middle band where no one can get to. And because of this, exploration into the twilight zone of the mesophotic presents as a really exciting new frontier for coral reef science. New species are continuously being described from here and discovered from here. And that's because the faunal assemblage of mesophotic reefs not only differs so much from the shallow water counterparts, they are unique to mesophotic communities. They're found nowhere else in the world. And like I said, scuba diving equipment is insufficient to get to the mesophotic realm. And to get there, we use something called a closed circuit rebreather. Basically, it's a really fancy breathing apparatus that allows you to stay underwater longer because it scrubs out the carbon dioxide from your exhalant air. So you're breathing in your exhalant air over and over again. But rebreathers themselves are not a new technology. You know, underwater rescue divers, cable operators, Navy divers, they use rebreathers often for their line of work. However, it's only in the last few decades that rebreather technology has been employed for coral reef science, which is why we're only entering the new age of coral reef research right now. Now, I want to stress that I don't do any mesophotic diving myself. I mean, to do so will require years of training and the kind of mental discipline and aptitude that I just don't have. And that's fine. Like, I'm okay with that. But I work with, you know, some of the most amazing mesophotic divers, experts in the field. They are the ones that are trailblazing this science, and I work hand in hand with them. And the number of new species that we're discovering is astounding. In the last 8 years alone, I've named more than 24 new species of coral reef fishes. And normally this is where I show you incredible photos of the kind of fishes that I work on, but I'm not able to do so today. So I want you to just imagine a fish no bigger than the length of your index finger. And this fish that you're imagining now is just so gaudy to the point where you have magentas, pinks, reds, yellows, blues, greens, every color you can think of, but not just muted colors, like highlighter, neon colors. And the fins are just ornamented with filaments and tendrils and appendages, such that this thing that you're imagining now could come out of a children's book. And that's precisely the kind of beauty that lives down in the mesophotic reefs. And, you know, I talk a lot about taxonomy, but the thing that I really want to say is that there is sort of a romantic, almost elegant, Lovecraftian sort of way that this field operates. And it might just be because we're working in the same legacy as, you know, Charles Darwin and Carl Linnaeus. There is a discipline to taxonomy that, and there's a huge responsibility. You're naming a new species. You're putting a name to something that no one knew existed before you. But there's also a lot of fun to it. I love my job as a taxonomist, and one of my favorite things about getting to name a species is picking the name. And oftentimes taxonomists, you know, we like to use names that are sort of descriptive enough that tells you a little bit about the fish or the animal that you're looking at. The very first fish that I ever described was a little fairy wrasse, no bigger than this. And I named it Cirrhalabrus isosceles because it had a triangular tail shaped like an isosceles triangle. But, you know, biologists are fun people, and we like to show our whimsy in the kind of names that we give. I've named a fish after a Doctor Who character. There's a fish that we discovered from the Mariana Islands, which is a stretch of islands in between Guam and Japan. Again, ridiculously colorful, just magentas, pink, purple. And it has a pair of pelvic fins, just chrome yellow pelvic fins. And I named it after the cocktail Tequila Sunrise. So the fish is called Sudantis tequila. And one of my favorite ones, in 2019, my colleagues and I discovered a new species of fairy wrasse off the coast of Africa in Tanzania. And this was when, you know, Black Panther was a thing. And I was like, let's call it Wakanda. Let's call it the vibranium fairy wrasse, Cirrhalabrus Wakanda. And it got picked up by Marvel, which was amazing. But that just goes to show that taxonomy is still very much alive. People want to hear about it. Yeah, sometimes you got to give it a glitzy name, do a little press release and, you know, show and tell. But the point is, there are heaps of new species out there and people want to hear about it. Novel discoveries are made all the time through exploration of new ecosystems. But we got to also understand that advancements in genetic techniques and, you know, renewed examination of historical specimens that we have in museum archives in combination have allowed us to shed light on new species that are hiding in plain sight. This is some of the work that I do as a taxonomist. When I look at a jar of fish, it's not just a jar of fish. It is millions of years of evolutionary history. It allows us to compare this species with another. We want to know about the relationships and how these relationships change over historical time and space. It is a time capsule of sorts of when and where something was collected, which then serves as a reference point for future and past research. So the next time somebody tells you that taxonomies and archaic signs, or that museums are old and dusty buildings, I want you to remember that there are people out there going to places no one has ever been to, finding things that no one has ever seen, or as my partner very succinctly puts it, finding cute fishes and giving them cute names. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Yi Kai T. He's a science communicator as well as a systematic ichthyologist with the Australian Museum. You heard him speaking at our Occam's Razor live event at the Powerhouse Museum on Gadigal Land in Sydney. I'm Tegan Taylor, your Occam's Razor host, and I'll be emerging from the depths of science again next week.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.